Welcome to the Heart of Dating podcast. Hey, it's Kate. I'm so glad you could join us this week as we try to untangle the ever so ambiguous world of dating as a Christian. Over here on Heart of Dating, we get real as we answer some tough questions and uncover transformative ways to approach Christian dating. Oh, and you better believe we have some laughs along the way, because last time I checked, the struggle is hashtag real. You know what I'm saying? Now, let's get to the heart of the matter. Hey fam, welcome back today. This is your host, Kate Warman, and I just want to say I'm so glad that you are here. And thank you so much for taking the time out of your day, whether you are getting ready, sitting and relaxing, maybe you're on your morning commute or traveling around, wherever you are, I'm so glad you chose to be with us. There are literally thousands of podcasts to choose from, so I feel really honored. Also, I'm real excited to let you know of a fun event we have coming up. I decided to team up with my good girlfriend, Christina, who is the founder of the DTR blog. Here's the thing. We want to give y'all a fun, stress-free, amazing place to meet like-minded single men and women who love Jesus. So we have partnered to bring you a single soiree. It's going to be held on May 11th here in Los Angeles. Buying a ticket will give you free wine for the evening, sponsored by our friends at One Hope. It is so delicious, trust me. There will also be some fun entertainment done by me and Christina, so be prepared to laugh and inspired. And we'll also have music and a few other fun surprises and maybe some matchmaking. And to the ladies worried, yes, there will be tons of guys. And also to the guys, definitely come and bring your friends, okay? So to grab a ticket, go to hoddtrsoiree.eventbrite.com. Okay, one more announcement and then on to today's episode goodness about dating anxiety. Yes, I can't wait. I want to encourage y'all that if you like this podcast, it would mean so much if you'd consider writing us a review. Reviews and rankings help us to continue to get discovered. They actually really make a difference for us, which is probably why you hear tons of podcasters talking about it. So if you would be willing to, would you go to the bottom of our iTunes page, rank us 5 stars, and write a short review? I want to read a review quickly from Janelle Barnett, who says, I stumbled upon this podcast, and I think what I love most about it is the variety of content that is provided. Kate is very articulate with what needs to be said and gives language to many things going on in my heart and even in my mind. Appreciate your heart, Kate. Keep it coming. Girl, you bet I will. Thank you so much. And to all the men, we'd love to see your reviews as well. Alrighty, friends, so today's episode is going to get into the nitty-gritty of dating anxiety. I invited my incredible friend, Brittany Moses, on to bring us her rich goodness on the subject, and y'all, she delivered. Brittany Moses is a Los Angeles native passionate about seeing this generation live wholeheartedly with purpose. While pursuing clinical psychology at the moment, she leverages her platform to reduce stigma, educate, and assist with helpful information on mental health, especially for those in the church. Brittany is also a certified recovery support group facilitator with NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. And still, her favorite part of her life is being called mommy to her sweet son, Austin. She is a girl boss, that's for sure. Friends, Brittany knows her stuff, and she is incredibly passionate about this topic. Also, she has a beautiful story of redemption and working through so many of the issues that she now addresses to other people with mental health, so it is absolutely incredible. If you've ever felt dating anxiety or felt bogged down by the fears in your mind about dating, or even struggled with codependency, you're going to love this episode today. So get out your notebook. You're going to want to take some notes. And without further ado, here's my interview with Brittany Moses.
Are you ready?
I'm ready.
The rolling of that R was amazing, Brittany. Just fiercely starting this podcast. Okay, welcome Brittany Moses to Heart of Dating. I'm so happy you're here, girl.
I'm so happy to be here.
I can't wait for our conversation today.
It's going to be good.
I've been looking forward to this, honestly.
I know.
Just knowing about what we're talking about and getting this quality time together.
Yes,
it's seriously. All the things.
I know.
So I am so pumped because I so admire what you do, girl. Will you just share a little bit about who you are and what you do for everyone listening so they are exposed to the amazing world of Brittany Moses?
Sure. So my name is Brittany Moses, and I'm born and raised in LA. Mm-hmm. So I mostly talk about the intersection of faith and mental health, just that intersectionality, because for a couple reasons. One, I was born and raised in the church, was a church kid, you know, and I had served and volunteered in ministry for so many years. And one of the things I saw time and time again were people who, you know, came to Christ, came to church, were born again, but were still trapped by their hurts, habits, and hangups, still blockaded mentally from fully showing up for their lives and who God called them to be. And then also I had my own struggles with anxiety and depression episodically that were very debilitating. And dealing with the whole stigma of, you know, I should be free, you know, I should not have the spirit of fear or depression because I'm a believer, and just learning how to navigate the human experience as a believer and what is perfectly human that, you know, we can get help for practically. So that's something I'm passionate about. I went back to school for clinical psychology so that I can continue to bring this message to the public, but also to the body more specifically, because it's a subculture that has its own set of stigmas when it comes to mental health. And so that's what I've mainly been doing for anybody who has ears to listen and follow my crazy,
amazingness. Yes. It's so good. I love it. Just all of your encouragement is so rich. And this is a topic that I love, just combining mental health and all with Christianity, because sometimes we're like, yes, I'll just say this Bible verse and immediately I'm better. And it's not exactly like that. Like you just said, you know, there's still, but then we're still stuck in depression or anxiety, or even as that relates to dating. And we're like, well, but why? Shouldn't I just be done with these things? And it doesn't really exactly work that way when it comes to our brain. Okay. So I'm so excited because we're going to kind of dive into something today, especially that I think so many people deal with, which is just triggers in relationship, dating anxiety. You and I have both talked at length about how we've both been infected by those things. And most people are actually. So will you just share a little with us even today about your personal background in dating, relationships, all of that?
Yeah, it's so funny because dating is not something that I talk a whole lot about. And so I have
most
to say,
people, girl.
I know. So I have to say this is very vulnerable for me. And, you know, I think for me, when I look back on my dating experience, I think it starts as early as like grade school and maybe middle school, where I remember that being the age where the girls really like the boys, boys like the girls, and I was kind of invisible, you know. And I just, at least to my knowledge, a lot of guys didn't necessarily like me or have a crush on me. I felt maybe a little bit overlooked. While I wish I could go back and tell my younger self, those things don't matter.
Right.
You know, at the time, though, we still have love and belonging needs, and you notice it. And, you know, it's like, is something wrong with me? Something wrong with me.
And that gets ingrained from such a young age. Isn't those kinds
crazy?
Of thoughts and lies. Yeah.
Just looking back on it. And then high school came, and you know, you develop more and the guys are, I don't know, more into the girls and whatnot. And I got a lot of attention from guys. And it was like, what is this?
Like, I'm seen.
I'm seen. What's going on? And I just had a lot of little random dating relationships throughout high school that were just these short-term dating on and off, thinking every single guy was the one, just reacting to attention. And, you know, again, wish I could tell my younger self, like, guys will always be there. Chill, relax. You know, it's going to be okay. Not every guy is the one. And then once I hit around 16, 17, that is when I was going through a lot of things at home and dealing with a lot of rejection, abandonment, disappointment, just in probably one of the most broken places, just because at that age, you don't have the, I want to say, maturity mentally to cope through those things or to reason through those things healthily. You automatically react to your environment as a reflection of yourself and your lack of worth, value, whatever it is, even if you don't say it or think it, you internalize it.
That's so true. Yeah.
Yeah. And that's when I ran into this relationship with my ex of 7 years. And he was a mess, to say the least. I was a mess. We were both a mess.
Yeah.
And I totally went into the savior syndrome of, you know, there's so much potential here. I could fix him. When really I think I was projecting because I needed help and I needed a fixing. And I projected that, I think, through him and this relationship. And so I spent 7 years in that. And that is also where that's also how my son came forth.
I love it.
At a young age. Yeah, he's the best part of my life. And even in spite of all that transpired around that relationship, one of the what happened was after having my son, that's around the time I came back to Christ. I came back to the faith, was born again, and fell into this, I want to say kind of fell into this trap of, okay, now I need to make things right. And I got a lot of advice, even just some kind of traditional advice from those around me, like, you need to make this right. So in my mind, we needed to get married. You know, we had a son together. We were living together at the time. And so it's like, we need to make this right. We can't be, you know, cohabitating and all these things. So we got married, which, again, I would tell my younger self, just because you had this situation doesn't mean
you have
you
to,
have
do
to
it.
Get married. Doesn't mean that's the next step. But in my mind, it was. And so I went through a very tumultuous marriage, very young, where I experienced a lot of just betrayal, a lot of unfaithfulness, a lot of codependency because there was addictions involved that I had to deal with. And again, just being in the mindset of saving this person, being if I can be everything that this person needs me to be and just structure myself around them and put them in the right environments and settings. Again, just that control and manipulation that comes with codependency where I'm enabling and there's that whole cycle of them depending. It's a tough cycle.
And you put your value in it.
Put your value in it.
Like, oh, well, now I'm helping them and now their success indicates my worth in some weird fashion, right?
Exactly. And but at the same time, while experiencing all those things, in the back of my mind questioning, like, am I worth anything more than this? The treatment and everything that I was getting. Long story short, that hit the fan. And, you know, he was not ready for that life. We were very young, you know, and I can say that we didn't come together for all the right reasons, you know, but it was definitely a learning lessons. I went through divorce very young because we've gotten married as early as 20, 21 years old. And it's not something I talk a whole lot about because he's still my son's father. But yes, went through all of that toxicity, learned a lot, grew a lot through that. Spent a lot of time making the decision to be single for a while because I needed to learn myself again and what I was worth and what God had for me and what God wanted for me, because I was, again, in this relationship from 16, 17 years old for, like, you know, 7 years. So that was all I knew. I never got to know myself and what a healthy relationship looked like. And, all of these things. So that's why I think single time is such a blessing. Because it really gives you that chance to start over, do that self-work, get yourself back on a solid foundation before you jump back in, so to speak.
I always say, like, if you don't love you, how else is someone else going to love you? Because it's such a vital part. And, you know, this quote from Perks of Being a Wallflower, that we accept the love we think we deserve. So if we don't truly love ourselves or know what that is, if we're not taking care of ourselves, we're going to accept something that's so not the best for us.
That's true.
Which is why that journey, even after your divorce, like, that's such an important pivotal time. Even when I encourage people through heartbreak and rejection, like, take that time to reclaim your identity. Because Otherwise, you're going to jump back into something to fill a void. You're going to go back into codependency, all of those things. You're going to have a lot of dating anxiety, speaking yep. of. And yeah, you're going to find yourself in another mess and then yet again have to pick up the pieces from another most likely heartbreak, or worse, get married and realize, oh my gosh, I made this huge mistake, you yes. know?
And it's a cycle yes. of just reacting mm-hmm. from relationship to relationship. Exactly. And it's not this choice of, you know, I'm choosing this relationship, being in a healthy mm-hmm. place, you know, after having reclaimed my identity. It's more of like I'm reacting right. to the attention that I'm yeah. getting yeah. that I didn't have before, or as I'm going through this very vulnerable process. Mm. And so it's so important to rebuild.
So important to rebuild. So, girl, thank you for sharing all of that. It's mm-hmm. incredible. It's so powerful. I'm just going to say it. Like, you, like, even just sharing that now, I know that there's people that can relate to, if not a lot of your story, parts of your story. I can relate to parts of your story too. I love that about our friendship. And so I can imagine through this process of just dealing with so many different things between codependency, betrayal, addiction, just so many different things, entering back into dating, there's probably a level of dating anxiety. So I kind of want to talk about that, because anybody who's been through anything in their life, a trauma or a bad relationship, or doesn't even have to be a bad dating relationship, it could just be, you know, abandonment from a family member or something, most likely experiences some sort of dating anxiety. So can we just talk about a little bit, like, what does that mean, and where does it come from?
Yeah. Dating anxiety is real.
Yeah, it's #hashtag real. The struggle is real. Yes.
And I think, like, it's part of, it's very human mm-hmm. because especially when you're starting a relationship or you're going into something new, there's so many unknown factors involved. Yeah. There's so many unknowns. You don't know where it's going in the beginning. Yeah. You don't know really what exactly you are in the beginning, and you don't know all the dynamics of this person that you're getting yeah. involved with. And so because there are so many unknowns, because you cannot control the situation mm-hmm. or the outcome, there's this anxiety that comes with it. Mm-hmm. And anxiety really is a lot of times a fear of loss of control. Yeah. Yeah. And love is one of those vulnerable things that mm-hmm. in context of a human relationship, it's just one of those things that you cannot control. They have to naturally take shape and form and have to naturally evolve. Mm-hmm. And so we don't have control over that process. Mm-hmm. We want to know, like, so we can know exactly where to place our hearts.
Yeah.
But that is just the beauty and the, the vulnerability
yes.
of going through it. So with relationship anxiety, it's a lot of times there's just a fear of the unknown mm-hmm. with this person, not knowing where you stand, not knowing where it's going, not knowing how much of your heart to give to the situation. And so you're kind of doing this dance around the stages of yes. the relationship, you know? And
like, where am I at? Yeah. Why didn't you text me?
Right. Or this fear of, like, do I like them more than they like me?
Yeah.
Am I getting ahead of them? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, all of that. Because naturally, we want to guard our hearts. Naturally, we don't want to get hurt. Mm-hmm. That's just self-preservation, human instinct.
Yeah.
You know, so the first thing I want to say about dating anxiety is it is not a shameful thing. And mm-hmm. anyone who's experiencing it, it is not because something is wrong with you.
Yeah.
That is just a natural human process of stepping into something unknown. Yeah. There's a slight vulnerability and the fear mm. of the unknown that you have to step through. Mm. But as far as where it comes from, so in the psych world, we have something called a schema. Mm. And a schema is the mental or psychological framework in your mind. Mm. And it's shaped by your experience. It is how we make sense of the world. Mm. You know, for example, on a very simple form of a schema, think of a chair. Mm-hmm. You know, as a child, you grew up to learn the framework of what a chair looks like, whether it's a computer chair or a high chair mm-hmm. or a chair at the table. You have a general framework of what a chair looks like, even in its different forms, because that is the schema that experience mm-hmm. has showed you.
Yeah.
Right. So it's basically the foundation of an idea. Mm-hmm. Now, getting more complicated, you bring that you bring that into relationships. Well, we have a schema for relationships that we have developed. And for a lot of us, especially in this generation, we have come from divorce culture.
Yeah.
We have seen a lot of relationships fail, whether it comes from our parents. We saw that their marriage didn't work out, or we saw maybe unhealthy patterns in the relationship with our parents, or even our own experiences of the relationships we went through where we experienced heartbreak, betrayal. And for many of us, all we've experienced are failed relationships. And so that is the schema. That is the schema that we have for relationships, that we associate relationships with failure. And so what happens is we develop these core beliefs within ourselves, whether we've said it out loud or not, we've internalized relationships fail. And that is the schema that we are seeing relationships through, that they are bound to fail. So even though you don't mean to, you know, you get into these new relationships or you get into a new relationship, and in the back of your mind, the core belief or the schema that's running is, you know, it's only so long before this relationship fails. It's only so long before this person betrays me. It's only so long before this person cheats on me. It's only so long before this person finds out who I really am and they are turned off by me and they leave. Because we've developed this schema for relationships, and it's rampant among our generation just because of what we've seen and been through. Or, you know, just again, when it comes to our own worth, if we've believed these things that we are not worth love, we are not worth committing to, we are not worth a healthy relationship because we've experienced everything other than that.
Yeah.
It's become a belief system. And so you have this real dating anxiety that is running in the background of your life because of these schemas and core beliefs that have taken root in your life. And unless you are proactively dealing with that and doing the work to gain a healthier, more balanced perspective on these things, which is hard work because you're undoing years of experience and what life has taught you,
right,
then it continues running, and sometimes it creates self-sabotage.
Yeah.
And it ends up becoming a self-fulfilling prophecy where we push the person away and we put up all these walls because of it.
Or we try to control them, and then that doesn't work either. Yeah,
all
exactly.
those things, because the brain is an associative brain. Naturally, it associates our experiences, you know, and it's not a bad thing because it's, again, how we make sense of the world.
Right.
That's the only way we can make sense of the world is by the experiences that we come in contact with. You learn not to touch a hot stove, you know, because maybe you burn yourself, or you learn not to do this because you experience that. It's associative, and it's built and structured that way for a reason, you know, including our survival. But you have these experiences that aren't life or death. You know, it's not survival.
Yeah.
But we still associate the traumas, and we still associate the heartbreaks because it's life-changing and it's pain, and that gets encoded, whether we realize it or not.
Friends, I just want to take a quick break from our amazing episode today to tell you a bit of our Heart of Dating sponsor for this episode. Let me just tell you, as a single woman, I am personally all about living my very best life in the season. Anyone else with me here? And because of that, I make sure I'm taking care of myself and prioritizing self-care, beauty, and fitness as much as I possibly can. But here's the thing. There are so many products out there, and sometimes I just want someone to share the best of the best with me to make my life even easier. That is when I discovered the amazing FabFitFun. If you don't already know what it is, it's a seasonal box with full-size beauty, fitness, and lifestyle products. I love that they give you full-size products. The box I personally received is so awesome, you guys. These are products that are actually top of the market that I truly use. Each season's box featured a variety of amazing quality brands such as Tarte, Kate Somerville, Anthropologie, Free People, Dr. Brandt, and so many more. That's just the beginning of it. The box with all these products retails for $49.99, but always has a value of over $200 within the box. Yes, 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 and amen. So Getting your FabFitFun box in the mail kind of feels like it's your birthday four times a year. When I got mine, I was so in awe because so many of the brands I use already and just love so much. So today, friends, just for Heart of Dating listeners, y'all are going to get $10 off your first box. Mm-hmm. Just go to FabFitFun.com and use the code HOD10 so you can save $10 off your first box, making it only $39.99. Again, that's FabFitFun.com using the code HOD10. Y'all, I'm just so excited for this. You deserve to live your very best single life. So go on and treat yourself.
So you're talking about doing the work. What does some of doing the work look like for people to get out of dating anxiety? I mean, I'm sure it's like a lot, but what would be some things to do the work?
Yeah, I don't think there's, when it comes to doing the work and anxiety in general, I don't think there's this expectation of to have none at all, mm-hmm. right? Because that's not human,
yeah,
right? That you're just not going to experience any fear at all.
Right.
Again, there are unknowns, so it's natural to experience some level of, okay, what am I getting myself into?
Yes.
You know, how much of my heart do I give? And so it's more so about working through it, I think, and creating a space for self-awareness.
Yeah.
And whether that is, for me, it was like journaling, you know, or whether it is a therapist, which I highly recommend.
Yes. Love therapy.
I highly recommend not going alone and not using, because what happens when you don't have these spaces to work out the self-awareness part is you take it out in the relationship. You start expecting the other person's love to heal you and to fix you in the relationship to fix you. And you put the responsibility on the other person to fix parts of you that only really is work that you and God can do.
Yes.
You know, so you really need to designate a space for that reflection. So for me, it was a really practical thing was just journaling. And sometimes I'm such a psych nerd, right?
Yes.
So I would create tables and columns in my journal.
I love it.
And it would be like, you know, this was the trigger. This is what I'm thinking. Like, this is what my thought automatically, where my thoughts automatically went. Here are two alternative ways I can see this. Or, you know, this is how I want to respond, but this is how I choose to respond.
Yeah.
Things like that. So because you just, again, you just need a place to work through it. Because
once you
do that, I've just seen myself work through situations and triggers and anxieties so much more healthily because I allowed that space where I could dump the issues and really work with it.
It's kind of like what you're saying is like that self-regulation, like self-awareness and self-regulating, like your mind, what's happening.
Right.
And you mentioned the word trigger, and I feel like I used to not even know what that word meant a few years ago. So I kind of want to break down like what is a trigger and like maybe some symptoms, because I think in this process of self-awareness and self-regulation, we need to know what it is and what it might look like to know that we're even experiencing it. You know, because a lot of people say, well, that's just how I am, or that's just how I react. I'm like, no, that's coming from somewhere else.
Right.
So that's not just a normal, like, oh, we can just bypass that and be like, well, I'm always reactionary. That's just how I am. No, you're experiencing that for a reason.
Right.
Yeah.
So when I think about a trigger, it's really our brain and our body trying to protect us from a threat.
Yeah.
It's trying to protect us from a threat, trying to protect us from pain. But sometimes that our brains are not associating the event or the person from a healthy perspective or in the right context. So it's funny. I've spoken about this before, but there's this researcher that I love. His name is Joseph Ledeau. And what he found was that when it comes to the brain's emotional response, there is basically a neural pathway that goes from the amygdala, which is our fear center of our brain, that goes to the amygdala quicker to alert our brains of a threat. Then it goes to our frontal lobes. The relay to our frontal lobes is not as fast.
Wow.
And so our frontal lobes are responsible for the thinking and planning and judgment center.
Wow.
That's where we have better judgment and we reason through things. That's what that center is for. So just if you can think about it, we're being alerted to the fear center
first.
Yeah. Quicker than the reasoning center, which explains why we overreact when something triggers us. Like,
how dare you?
The end of the world. He didn't text back. He hates me.
Yeah.
You know, oh my gosh, it's over. You know, and then we look back.
I shouldn't have sent that extra emoji. Sorry.
Heart eyes too soon. He left me on red. Like, you know.
He started the three. It started the ellipses and then it disappeared. Oh my goodness.
It's the end. Right?
Exactly.
And we overreact. And only to find that it wasn't that serious.
Yeah,
you know, exactly. And it's those frontal lobes, they shut down, you know, and it's so funny. I was telling Kate, I'm such a nerd. When I go through, it's like my frontal lobes are down right now. My amygdala is being alerted.
My frontal lobes are down, everybody. Nobody fear. They will be back up and running shortly.
As strange as that sounds, that. Like I've totally told myself that to reason the situation.
Oh my gosh. I'm just going to start saying that to guys. I'll get right back with you. My frontal lobes are down right now.
Exactly.
Please check back in 20 minutes.
And it's called an emotional hijacking.
So yes.
I'm having an emotional hijacking. My frontal lobes are down and my amygdala is being alerted. And so that's what a trigger is really. Mm-hmm. You know, and once the fear response is activated, you have the cortisol that's coming, the stress hormones that are released. And speaking of symptoms and physical symptoms, sometimes your palms get sweaty, your heart is racing, your thoughts are racing. You might even get sick to the stomach. That's what happens to me if I have anxiety. Because what happens is your body is preparing to fight or flight.
Right.
That's when you hear about the fight or flight response.
Yeah, it's
because
so true.
It's preparing you. So your body is preparing you to either defend yourself or to run in the presence of a threat. And what's funny is in all the other species, like animals and whatnot, they use this for survival. That is the purpose of that whole symptom, you know, to respond from predators and whatnot. We are the only species where we use it for social situations.
They're like about to die.
They're like about to die.
And that makes sense. But we are not about to die and we use it as if we are.
We go to 100.
Wow.
It's like we feel like we're about to die. But it's not. Wow. They're just social situations. And we really do inflict this level of stress on ourselves. That's kind of, you know, it can be overreactional, but it's real. It's real. It happens. And so, like I said, the brain is associative. So if you've had an experience before, just for an example, where say you were in a relationship and the guy all of a sudden became more distant and you sensed there was some distance there and he wasn't really responding the way that he does or as quickly as he did. And eventually that led to a breakup. You know what I mean? Or you were in a relationship where a guy had a female friend and eventually you found out that there was something more going on.
Right.
You know, when you broke up. Right.
Yeah.
So your brain has associated these experiences.
Wow.
Just subconsciously, you know. And so then the next time you go into a relationship and the guy starts getting distant or he feels distance, you're automatically like, he's going to break up with me.
Yes.
It's
and
over.
You're like putting up your armor or you're putting on your audition gown. You're like, okay, here we go. I got to perform.
Showtime.
Yeah.
Showtime. You know, or you distance yourself.
Yeah.
Because you're like, and now you're both distant. That's a whole other story. Or then you're in a new relationship where you're with a guy who has a female friend and it's totally healthy. It's totally fine. But because of your last relationship where it was something else, and you know, you're associating it like, I feel threatened by this friendship.
You're not speaking things that have actually happened to me at all, Brittany.
That's
no.
I know nothing about this. You know, because your brain associated those previous experiences. So you could technically have experiences that look the same, but they are not the same. But your brain has already associated those. So you're triggered, right? You're triggered and your brain is trying to protect you.
Yeah.
So then you experience those symptoms. And communication is just so key.
Yeah.
As someone who is currently in a relationship and has gone through, you know, traumas, and I kind of told you guys my story earlier where there was unfaithfulness and there was abandonment and a lot of lying and all of that, you know, to enter a new relationship from a healthy place, it took a lot of time before entering the relationship to work through what are the associations that I've made, what are the triggers that I have, and is this real or is this imagined?
Yes.
And then learning to communicate in ongoing relationships. Okay, what is going on in this situation?
Right.
You know, not being afraid to ask, because right. what you find is if it truly is a great and healthy relationship where that is not the situation, that is not the context, maybe he didn't respond back and he seems distant because he's been stressed or he's been busy all day.
The boy is busy.
All right. You know, he's been busy or he's needing some time to himself and that's why. It's not because he's going to break up with you.
Yeah.
You realize, oh, you know, it wasn't as bad as I, but you have these triggers from
and
past
experiences. Downward spiral and you make assumptions. Well, because what you're saying and something I've learned, and this was hugely pivotal for me, is basically the stories and assumptions that we create in our mind about things. And to your point, they're usually about things we've experienced and those associations. But so we start making these stories and assumptions. And what I heard once from somebody else was that basically 97% of the stories and assumptions we're believing are actually false.
Right.
Or the version, the full version we're believing is false. Maybe some version of it might be true. But what we're actually truly, so that's like huge. When I heard that, I was like, whoa. Because I'm like, I have a lot of intuition. I know things.
I trust my gut. My gut is always right.
It's always right. So I know that you're talking to that girl and it's something more. And the guy's like, no, girl. No. But what I realized is like, okay, in the communication piece, like this is just something I've learned to practice, is also just not attacking them and assuming that it's true, which is really important to recognize this is a story that I am believing. So how can I frame it to them by saying, hey, so I'm kind of creating this story in my own mind and this happened or you said this and I started to feel this way and I have no idea if this is actually true or if it's just something I'm believing, but I just wanted to bring it to your attention and see, you know, what's really going on here.
Right. Perfect. And it's, you know, you're owning it.
Yes.
And you're using I statements.
Yep.
And then if they are a great and just loving and genuinely caring person toward you. I mean, there's no reason for them to not just be like, oh no, you know, it's, this is what's going on, you know, and if they really do care about you, like they'll explain it.
Yes.
You know, and then it just, it really reduces all that fear.
Exactly. And it's so much better than just being like, you're talking to this girl. I'm just using that situation. You're talking to this girl and I know something is happening. Like you're immediately criticizing them or you're attacking them. And then they go on the defense and then there's no healthy conversation. Even they could possibly be, you know, totally innocent, but you're not going to have any sort of healthy communication.
It won't be fruitful
if you approach it that way.
And speaking of being practical, so knowing that we have these triggers, first of all, I think knowing is the first step.
Yeah.
Knowing what your triggers are. Mm-hmm. You know, I would even write down the events or people that trigger me. Like I would write it down in my journal just to create an awareness, because once you even just create that space of awareness, now you can actually do something about it.
Right.
If that awareness is not there, then you're just reacting. But if you can actually write down, I noticed like this event triggers me, or when this happens, this triggers me, you know, and develop that awareness, now you can actually proactively start to de-escalate.
Right.
So again, we know that the frontal lobes are down and the fear response is activated. So something that I always say is, you know, try to give it 24 hours because what I have found a lot of times is once the emotional response has subsided and my thinking has kind of come back, my frontal lobes are back up and running, then I'm assessing the situation from a healthier place, you know, giving it 24 to 48 hours before you jump in.
That's so good.
Before you do anything.
Yeah.
Like a lot of times I'm just like, don't react right now. If it doesn't bother me in 24 to 48 hours, then it was just me, most likely. But if it is something that throughout the relationship and throughout the dating time that you're together that you notice it's reoccurring and it's really, really triggering you, then I think two things. One, like you probably should talk to the person that you're with about it. And two, you should really start working through those things if it's a reoccurring trigger, because there's obviously something more there. There's obviously an association that you're either making with the past, or it's something that genuinely needs to be worked out in the relationship that you need to get on the same page about.
Yeah.
And I think that relationship anxiety reduces the more communication you have with one another and the more you're in tune with yourself. That's really how, at least for me, you can kind of move through relationship anxiety from a healthy place.
That's so good. And also, like, something you're saying too, because there's obviously various levels of triggers, and something I find that can be the most hard to work through is when you have been betrayed or gone through a deep, deep trauma, like a sexual trauma or a physical abuse trauma, or again, like someone, you know, betrayal trauma. But so those are things that are, I mean, I'll just say it right now, they're probably going to come up again for you. I know for me, I've been through all of those things and they do come up again.
Right.
And, but in the past, I didn't have the language or the ability to recognize it. And now through time, through therapy, through honestly practicing dating and realizing, oh, this is coming up again. Okay, this is coming from this place, like practicing this own curiosity within myself to say, oh, this is where it's coming from. It's not because this person is necessarily going to do that to me, you know?
Right.
But I just find like it's okay to have grace with yourself knowing that these things might come up again. Yeah. But what do you also think for a partner who's on the other side of it, I guess, like if you're with someone who has been through a lot of those kinds of traumas in the past, like how do you have the patience, I guess, or what is that process look like?
Yeah, I think that as an other person, you do need to have like that space for grace as well and understanding what it is that they're working through, and also encouraging their healing process, but not taking on their healing process, because that is where codependency comes in.
Yes.
You know, but saying, you know, hey, I know that you're working through this. You know, how can I be there for you? So I think that one, being understanding, obviously goes along, going a long way of understanding what they're going through and, you know, talking through it with them, having that grace, again, supporting, but not taking on, taking on the responsibility of their healing, and even providing encouragement.
Yeah.
You know, say you guys do work through something and there was a trigger and they were activated and you guys happen to work through it and de-escalate down, and just providing positive feedback that's just like, man, you know, I'm really proud of like the way that we're working through this now, or I'm really proud of you for, you know, I know how hard this is for you.
Yeah.
You know, I know how hard these triggers are for you and what you're going through, but I can see that you're growing a lot and I really appreciate the work that you're putting in. And I just am a big believer of positive feedback and positive encouragement.
So good.
When it positive reinforcement, so to speak, when it comes to relationships and when the other person is deeply, deeply working through some tough stuff.
Yeah.
And maybe even checking in with them and asking like, hey, you know, do you want to talk about this? Or, you know, is there someone, I'm trying to think how I want to say this. Like, do you need to, I'm like trying to say this gracefully, like, do you need to see a therapist again?
Yeah.
Not saying that.
But a version of it, but like, you know, encouraging them that you're with them, you don't judge them.
Exactly.
And that you just want to see them be able to conquer this. And
yeah.
But like, I think what you're saying in the codependency is huge, because if they're, you can't take it upon yourself to feel the weight of their issue on you,
right?
Because then it becomes your issue as well.
Exactly. Know? And then there's codependency where they're depending on you to fix them, and you live through your relationship of being a savior to them, and then you begin the cycle of codependency. So anytime there is a relationship where one person is just struggling with something really heavily and you're the other one, which we're not, you know, on the other side, you're not perfect either. You still have your set of things that you need to work through. So you can still provide a level of empathy of, I'm with you. Like, I have these struggles.
That's huge.
These type of
empathy,
struggles too.
Yes.
So I'm with you. I hear you, you know, and let's, and I think it's so great to kind of set a standard in the relationship with one another where it's like, you know what? I want this to be a relationship where we are growing together and we're continue to work on ourselves as we bring ourselves to the table, as we show up to this relationship together. And encouraging one another in your growth journey. Mm. I think just having that culture in your relationship as well is very supportive.
Yes.
As someone is working through the traumas and whatnot.
Yeah. I love that. Because too often it's like you can then separate yourself so much. You're like, no, like, right. You know, and you need to provide some level of comfort, encouragement, empathy. There's like that balance where it's not codependent, right. But you still, that's important to provide that reinforcement. I think that I've talked to so many people that one thing that I think is so clear that we're saying is, overall, like, take radical ownership of the things you've been through and know that it can get better. And you are in charge of your own healing. You're in charge of your own mind, and you can fix these things. But you have to understand, like, being in a relationship is not going to fix that. That person isn't going to make it all of a sudden better. If you're noticing the trigger, then you have to do the work and take ownership of, like, okay, this is something that's happening to me because of this. I need to continue working through that. And thank you for having the grace for me as I work through this.
Right. And that's kind of the thing about relationships. I always say relationships are a mirror, because when you're single and you're not with someone, you can kind of suppress these things, you know,
totally.
Or you can kind of just dismiss these things and repress them. But when you're in a relationship with someone, they begin to really reflect what's going on with you, because now you're doing life with someone. And yes. So it, if anything, a relationship kind of pulls these things out more.
Right.
You know, and there is,
it brings it to surface. You're like, oh shoot, I never had to talk about that before, but now I do.
But now I do, because it's affecting another person, because there's another person involved. There's there's accountability now, because like what I'm doing and what I'm reacting to and whatnot, it's being reflected out in this relationship because there is that other person involved now. So, you know, it's really, really, that's why I really do believe in the beauty of relationships. And a lot of times people will think, you know, I should not be in or start a relationship until I've completely dealt with all these issues. Right. And yes, you should work to get to a healthier place, you know, when entering a relationship. You want to make sure that you're entering it for all the right reasons, quote unquote.
Yeah.
You know, but understand that you're always going to have some issues that you have to deal with, whether you're in a relationship or not. And understand that when you get into a relationship, if you get into a relationship, there is a potential that these things will come out and they will expose themselves, because you are doing life with this person now who is now going to be reflecting back off of you what you're dealing with. And understand that that is not a reason to shy away. That is not a reason to give up on love. That is not a reason to run. That is just another reason to say, wow, like, I have some work to do. And doing the work that you need to do through this relationship, especially if you've struggled with traumas and abuse, having, again, that other space, that other designated space to work through these things while you're in the relationship, so that you're not putting it all on the other person, or so that there doesn't grow this codependency. So whether it be having a therapist, which I highly recommend, where you can work through these triggers and schemas and core beliefs with as you're moving through this relationship, or that journaling process. I think a lot of us, when something comes up, we automatically go, oh my gosh, something's wrong with, you know, something's wrong with us. Running, this isn't working. And it's
this,
like,
is,
no,
too hard.
It's going to be, you're going to have to learn how to work through and move through that with vulnerability, with growing with this person. And it's hard, but it is a part of the work. And that is, I mean, that's a gospel message.
Yeah.
And that's why it's so beautiful.
It's a sanctification process.
It is sanctification.
And I always share with people too, because I have quite the history too of just all the, you know, abuse and various relationship things and affirmations and just situations. And I realize, and I have to realize, like, hey, my dating story isn't going to be this picture perfect. Like, we met, we locked eyes, we knew, and we didn't have any issues. You know, you hear stories of people who have little conflict or very little problems. And I'm like, that's beautiful for those people. But I have to recognize that that's probably not exactly going to be my story, because my story is pretty traumatic. And there's broken parts of the story right. that I know will just come back to surface. I'm not afraid of those parts. It's just, right. okay, I'm ready to attack them. But I know that they'll probably come back up. And so I know that there'll be relationship work that has to be done, both on my end and with that other person. And so I know that those conversations, I know it'll be just a little trickier. And so I try to tell people, like, your relationship may not look like that perfect couple that just, they just probably didn't go through those things when they were younger. They just probably went through less things, and that's okay. Mm-hmm. But stop comparing your relationship and how much work you're having to put into this to other people who just have a totally different background and story.
Right. And I think you having that level of awareness is going to work in your favor, mm-hmm. knowing that you're going into it realistically, knowing, like you said, okay, I probably am going to hit some walls. Mm-hmm. I probably am going to have some triggers. Just having that foreknowledge and being real with yourself is great, because then when you do get into it, it's like, you know what? I knew this was coming.
Yeah.
And I am prepared. Yeah. I mean, are we ever really prepared? Yeah. But
as prepared as we can
as
be.
As I can be. I'm more prepared than I would have been had I not been in reality of the fact that, especially if there's heavy traumas, you know, you're going to have to. And honestly, we might have to work through some of these things the rest of our lives.
Right.
As part of the human experience. But the hope is that as we work through these things, with each overcoming, we get, you know, we become more resilient,
right.
and we're quicker to put in those coping skills, or we're quicker to recognize it, because over time we've worked through it over and over again. So it's not that we're immune from it, but it's that we have learned how to overcome and how to work through these things more efficiently.
Like, you're creating new neural pathways. You're sharpening the tools to be able to, like, hello, brain talk.
Hello, neuroplasticity.
Yes. But you're recreating it. And that's the beautiful part of neuroplasticity, that our brain, we can change the pathways of our brain. So by doing it over and over, and, you know, it takes 21 days to make a new long-term memory. I'm just totally quoting Dr. Caroline Leaf right now.
And
63 days to create a new habit. So, but, like, that's very consistent. You have to do that. It doesn't mean, and even in the future, if something comes back up, that toxic thought, that whatever, it's not to say, oh, I've completely failed. It's like, no, I'm noticing it's there, but now I have way better tools and it doesn't have to take me down now.
Right.
You know, it's like,
it's funny because I talk about mental health a lot and people are like, so tell us, when did you overcome mental health? I'm like, excuse me, I'm still human. Like, I still
process.
Have triggers. Yeah. I still, like, all of that is still existing, but now I have more tools in my tool belt to deal with it. That is the difference. You know, I still experience all of it. I just recognize it better. And when it happens, I know how to respond better and which tools to pull out for it.
Right.
But like you were saying, like, there is neuroplasticity. So the brain is like a muscle. You can think of it as a muscle. And the more that you practice a certain thought pattern, or the more that you practice a certain response, the more you strengthen those neural pathways that are responsible for that response.
Right.
But if we practice a new way of thinking, and this is where I love where scripture meets science, where it talks about renewing our mind and renewing our thoughts and attitudes. You know, a lot of times we see that and it's just like, how?
Yeah.
But how do you renew your mind? Like, literally.
Yeah.
You know,
we can just say
it.
Like,
it
oh,
into existence?
Yes, God, I take every thought captive. But, like, you can't just say that.
Yeah.
There's an action behind it. Yeah.
Faith plus faith without works is dead.
Yeah.
And so you look at the science behind renewing your mind, and it's true. The more that you kind of do that shift where you practice a new way of thinking and you practice that new thought response, where in that moment where you have that trigger and you pause and you think about it, and then you reassess the situation, you work through it, and then you shift to a different way that you're going to see the situation. You do that over and over again. Mm-hmm. Now you really are like shaping your brain to respond differently and to kind of maybe lessen that hyperactivity and whatnot. And so you are able to change the chemistry of your brain.
Which
and I think
so
that's
cool.
So cool.
It is so cool.
It's something that we, you know, neuroscience and psychology just didn't know for years. And now that we are in an age of technology, we have brain imaging and all these things, we can see that this can happen. And so
there's so much empowerment in that, that we have more control than we sometimes believe. We're like, we think we're powerless. I'm like, no, we actually have a lot of power. If you're in stinking thinking, it's because you're choosing to be in it. And so let's get out of stinking thinking.
Right. And if it's too much for you yourself to overcome, like, because sometimes I know you're in such a pit where it's just like no amount of your own willpower is going to get you out of that. Mm-hmm. That's where it's so important to have that support system.
Right.
And those people who know this is key. Those you need to have friends or at least two or three people who know what your triggers are.
Right.
Who know what you're struggling with and who know your automatic responses, so that when you can't pull yourself out, they can pull you out. You can just be like, it's so funny. I have my designated crazy friends. That's what I call them. It's like my friends who can handle my crazy.
Oh my God.
Or my friends who know my crazy.
Yes. Right? Oh, I have the same. You know, probably more than two or three.
We talked about it. It's like, this is what we're practicing today, you know, with each other via text, you know, because we know each other's where we go. You need to have those friends who know where you go, whether it's your therapist or it is, you know, a couple friends. Have people who are aware. This is just accountability. Again, you know, two are better than one. Three stranded cord cannot be broken. You know, it all applies. And so working through it with a friend that you trust.
Yeah.
Not everybody. Yes. You cannot take this to everybody, because some people will feed your fears.
Oh, yeah.
Like, oh, girl, I can't believe this. He did what? Oh, no, he's definitely – you don't need that friend.
Oh, no. Exactly. You don't need that friend at all.
The one that goes, okay, let's think about this. What has been true of his character up to this point?
Yes.
Based on what you said, you know, it seems like he would respond fine. It's, you know, just try – you know, asking this, is this you or
is
this
fear? Do you think that this could be coming from this or in someone who knows those things who can help to redirect you? Like what I'm saying is, like, we have blind spots, especially when we're so close to something. We're like, it's right in front of my face. So like the other people are around and they're like observing from afar, and you can see a lot more from afar sometimes than if you're up close and personal, because you're looking at all the elements, and versus me being right next to that person, I'm not looking at the elements.
Right.
Because I'm like in it. Right there.
Exactly.
And it's so important to have that, because it's like, oh, you're right. Okay. And they know this about me, and they know this is like a frequent reaction of mine or a frequent, you know, whatever. And so they can help me redirect in a loving way, but sometimes it's that hard truth, and we need that. It's so vital.
Right. And I do think it is a minimal amount of people when I say this, because I'm of the belief system that, like, everybody and their mama doesn't need to be in your relationship.
No, too many voices get confusing.
Don't need that. And it's not about, again, this is not about going to that trusted friend and, like, you know, ranting about the other person. Right. You know, I think it's more so about dealing with your stuff. Like, this is what I'm struggling with
100%
right now. These are my triggers. And that being coming from that light.
It's so helpful. Yeah. When I bring that to people, I'm like, okay, so he did this and it made me feel this way, but I feel like I might be reacting because of this. Help me. Can you help me, like, work through this?
Right.
Or just listen and, you know me, so tell me what you think, or my old tendencies. And it's so helpful. We're not here, even after a breakup, I'm like, don't just sit there and dodge on your ex, because it's not about that. That's not productive to anybody. You don't just need to, like, be gossiping about the person or putting them down so much to make yourself feel better. It is not productive at all. Mm-hmm. And that just contributes to that bad neural pathway of, like, just toxicity towards that person and resentment and so many things, blah, blah, blah. girl, we could go on this.
I know.
This is so helpful, though. I think that people are just going to be so encouraged and think, oh, wow, okay, and empower that they can do the work. Yes. This is not like a simple process, but you can feel empowered that you can get sharper tools, that if you've been in a lot of trauma, if you've had a lot of trauma, if you've really respond to triggers, if you're constantly in dating anxiety, like, it's okay. That's normal. Both of us are admitting that we have those struggles, and we've had them a lot in the past. But you can be empowered to, like, actually strengthen the tools that you have, clean off the dust off those tools, sharpen them, make them better, and you can fight through this.
And that's the thing. You really just have to be willing to do the work.
Yes.
And a lot of people, honestly, don't want to do the work.
Yeah.
But I have to say this, like, if you want to have a healthier relationship, especially if you've experienced dysfunctional and painful relationships in the past, and that has only been your experience up to this point, you do have the power to say, you know what? I am going to be in a healthy relationship. I choose to be healthy for a relationship. And, you know, all the work that you put in is going to just further develop, like, what you bring to the table in your next relationship.
Exactly.
And not only doing it for relationships, let me say. Like, I'm not just
– yeah.
Not I'm getting healthy for him necessarily, but for or for her.
Right.
You know, but it is for you because you take you into the relationship, and the relationship is made up of the two people who are in it. And so deciding, like, I'm going to do the work, you know, I'm going to, you know, see a therapist, I'm going to start journaling, I'm going to work through these triggers and find out where they come from so that I know – and I'm aware of when I need to bring out these tools.
Yes.
Right. So
it's because it'll
work.
It'll happen even without romantic relationships too. You need these tools for so many relationships. Okay.
Good point.
So, girl, I always ask everyone the same final question. I feel like it could even be like, do the work. But what is your final nugget of dating advice for the Heart of Dating peeps today?
That's great. Based on today's conversation, without sounding cheesy, like, don't give up on love. No, like, I know, but seriously, if you have been through a lot of trauma and you've been through a lot of heartbreak and you have been through a lot of pain, like I was saying earlier, for a lot of us, if that's been our only experience, that's all we associate relationships with is it's bound to fail, it's bound to hurt, they're bound to leave, you know? And so for some of us, for some of you, you may have shut down and said, is love worth it? You know, is it even worth pursuing? And, you know, and this is something that is for everybody else, this idea of love, dating, of marriage. It works for other people. That's something for everybody else. This healthy relationship idea happens to other people, but it doesn't happen to me. Like, it's not for me, it seems. I just want to encourage you that you can take charge over this. You can change the narrative and it is for you. You are capable and worthy of a healthy relationship with godly love and everything that God has for you, regardless of what the core beliefs and lies and experience has told you, has taught you. There is our experiential truth and what reality has taught us, but then there is God's truth, which overrides all of the lies and experiences and kind of natural elements that we've experienced through our human experience. And God said it, you know, God, once God has ordained it, it doesn't matter. You know, the whole idea of your past doesn't define you. It just prepares you, you know, so you are capable and worthy of having a healthy relationship. I just encourage, you know, do the work on yourself. Like you said, Kate, it's not just for dating and relationships. It will play out into all of your other relationships. Learn to have a healthy love and relationship with yourself.
Yes.
Because that does kind of set the foundation of the love that you receive and the standard of love that you receive as well. And just know that your future can look different than your past.
Yes. Amen. Oh my gosh. I'm just like sitting here like, thank you. I receive it. I receive it. Yes. Amen.
I receive it for myself. Yeah. I'm talking to myself, but I'm talking to everyone else. Yeah. Because we're all in it.
We're
all in this together.
Oh my gosh. I love it. Oh, wow. I get it, girl. So where can people connect to you and just follow along with what you're doing? Because it's amazing.
Yes. Instagram. I'm on Instagram.
Yes.
Brittany Moses, BrittneyMoses. And Moses is my last name.
I love it.
People have asked me, like, is that really your last name or are you just really spiritual? I'm like, no. I'm on Facebook. I'm on Twitter. I'm on, BrittanyAMoses.com is my website. So
Perfect.
That's where I have all things faith and mental health.
So cool.
Which is really fun. I have a podcast, the Faith and Mental Wellness podcast.
So good.
I'm trying to get it as poppin' as Kate's podcast.
Yeah. I'm awesome.
I'm working on it. I'm in school.
Yes, we popping over here at Heart of Dating.
Trying to, you know.
With a lot of wealth of knowledge. Girl, we all struggling.
I know, right? So, yeah.
Love it.
I love making friends, so. I'd love to be your friend.
Yeah. Be Brittany's friend. I'm so glad you're my friend.
I know.
Well, girl, thank you so much for sharing all this wisdom. I get so empowered and excited just sharing this kind of truth and knowledge with people. And so just thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge, so much truth, and your heart with us today.
Thanks for having me.
Wow, wow, wow. How good was that, friends? I am so impressed by Brittany. She continually just brings so much truth and wisdom, and it's an honor to do life with her and be her friend. And studying brain, mental health, anxiety, all the things, all of it is so helpful and also super mind-blowing to me every time when I just learn more information about it. I love today when Brittany said, relationships are like a mirror. When you are single, you can suppress more, but a relationship will pull things out. And it's so true. Relationships will bring things to the surface, but that's not something for us to fear. Rather, it presents us with an incredible opportunity to grow even further and be more curious and understand ourselves and others and how to love others even more. Y'all, please go and connect with the amazing Brittany on Instagram at Brittany Moses, and also go follow her at Christian Mental Health. She's doing incredible things, and I know she'd love to connect with y'all even further. I cannot be more thankful for your support of the Heart of Dating podcast. I am blown away by your rankings, reviews, messages, all of it. If you want to be a part of our inner circle and support what we are doing, we encourage you to pledge any dollar amount that you want on our Patreon page at patreon.com/heartofdating. Also, if you like this podcast, would you please consider giving us a review? It helps us immensely, and we cannot thank you more. Until next time, friends.